Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? For just $20 an episode, we'd read your name here and maybe say a special message about how great you are as a human being, product, and or company. Just go to nerdandtie.com and look on the right sidebar, and you'll find all the sponsorship information you need. Or at the bottom of the page if you're on the mobile site. But really, who with money is using the mobile site?
All right, on this Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie, we mourn the passing of Christopher Lee. Jurassic World has the biggest opening weekend ever. Earthbound and Shenmue 3 are happening. American Gods is becoming a TV series, and I'm going to talk about Cyborg 009 versus Devilman. All that, along with Convention News, the Mailbag, and the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. This is Nerd and Tie.
Exciting.
It's extremely exciting. It is a great Fortnite to be alive, and it's great to be back on the show.
We missed you, Nick.
I definitely
kicked all sorts of butt. So you know,
Gen was great, but I miss you too, Nick. But
yeah, you're not my life. It's Gen was like, you know, you go to a restaurant and you want a Coke, but they give you a Pepsi, and you're like, this is okay, I like this, but sometimes you want the original back.
No, I like Gen no matter what, but...
Are you saying you like Gen more than Nick? Because I'm saying I like having Nick on the show more than replacement hosts.
I like having Nick on the show, too.
Because I like... I value Nick as a person.
I like both Gen and Nick equally.
Lies.
Gina, you're not helping.
I'm not saying I like Nick more than Gen. I'm saying I like having Nick on the show more than a replacement, even if the replacement is better than Nick.
Oh, damn it.
We haven't even introduced ourselves yet.
I'd say, yeah.
No, we haven't.
Saying that, explicitly stating that Gen is better than me, we have Trey Dorn. Oh. And being Tina and not helping at all, we have Fur.
He's wearing the right colors.
But let's be honest, Nick. Even the opposite of helping is still helping. So
I guess, yeah.
He's got the glasses, the blue shirt. He's like cosplaying Tino, the male version.
Tino.
You know, Tina was originally male, in the first pilot.
I know. Because I read the Bob's Burgers wiki.
Oh.
And the guy who brought Bob's Burgers into this discussion in the first place, I'm Nick Izumi, and I'm not having technical difficulties this week, so yay.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. Fingers crossed, knocking on wood, or at least the corrugated wood-like substance my desk is made of.
You know, if you people at home knew how many technical problems we were having before the show started today, you would be screaming at Nick for making jokes like that.
The fact that this show is even happening right now...
Nothing short of
it. Is un miracle.
It's incredible.
Incroyable.
So we mostly have good stuff on the show this week.
We do.
Mostly good. And some incredible, unbelievable stuff. But we're going to start off with a bit of a somber note. Just this last week, we lost a great, truly one of the greats in genre films. He was Dracula in more Hammer horror movies than I care to count. A lot of you probably remember him as Count Dooku in the Star Wars movies or as Saruman in the Lord of the Rings films. We lost Christopher Lee.
Yeah,
he was a legend, great actor, amazing human being. Yeah.
General Badass.
Yeah, that.
No, I mean, he was 93 years old. I mean, this isn't one of those taken too soon from his kind of things. I mean, it's sad that he's gone. I mean, he was 93, and that's just old age, I kind of think. But I mean, there's no one, I don't think anybody could have lived a fuller life. The man did it all. He acted. I mean, he was one of the people that was kicking ass all across World War II as a member of the Department of Ungentlemanly Warfare for for Great Britain.
Well, my favorite story about him is him correcting Peter Jackson on the sound a person makes when they're stabbed in the back.
I love that story.
And when asked how he knew that, he has responded, "Well, I've stabbed someone in the back before."
Well, yeah, like that story first came out, I think, during the audio commentary for Return of the King, when Peter Jackson said, like, "All right, so you're going to get stabbed in the back, and I want you to do this." And Christopher Lee goes, "That's not what a person sounds like when they get stabbed in the back." And Peter Jackson is just like, I kind of let it go after that, because all I know is that he was in some spec ops group during World War II.
Have you guys had the pleasure of watching any of the Dracula movies he did with Peter Cushing? Because those they're pretty fantastic.
I've seen part of one, but I'll admit that I'm mostly familiar with him from his later genre work, not the Hammer stuff.
The Hammer movies are definitely an acquired taste, but they're pretty entertaining, and he and Cushing had some really good chemistry. They're pretty fantastic movies. Pretty much any time you can find him as Dracula, they're worth checking out.
Recorded like 7 heavy metal albums, including a very heavy metal Christmas.
For the blood of the Saxon men.
Like, he recorded a metal cover of Christmas songs album, and he has like 3 or 4 concept albums about Charlemagne. It's amazing.
I'm never happy when we lose someone who's a figurehead of just like genre film or one of, I guess, the geek. I don't know what to call him, but just like one of those figureheads of geekdom. But when you lived a life as full and as amazing as what Christopher Lee led, you can't help but look back on him and be a little bit happy that it's like, it's sad to see him go, but to know that he lived such a great life, that feels good.
I kind of feel bad for everybody else who died that week.
Yeah.
Ron Moody, poor Ron Moody, who was a god. Like Ron, for those of you, all the headlines were like Ron Moody, you know, who played Fagin in the Oliver movie. Like, I'm like, 12 Chairs.
Yeah.
12 Chairs. You have to understand, in my family, 12 Chairs is a very important film. My parents quote that film constantly. We were like, that is, in fact, the very fact is it's the best thing that Mel Brooks ever made. And it's because, of course, it's a fairly faithful adaptation of the Russian novel, just with a change to the ending to make it a little happier.
Plus, let's be honest here, Frank Langella has never looked hotter.
Frank Langella is an amazing human being.
He has never looked hotter than that movie.
Well, Stop Bender is – in the original book –
I've never seen this movie.
Nick, get on it, dude.
Ashamed, yeah.
Ron Moody, Frank Langella, Dom DeLuise. It's amazing. It's based off a Russian novel. The only significant change to the end is that in the original book, Ron Moody's character kills Ostap Bender in the book.
Oh, jeez.
But they changed that for the film. Although I will say that, but. The Ostap Bender character in the novel was so popular in Russia, when the author wrote a sequel, he brought back Ostap Bender and made it so he miraculously survived. But Ostap Bender, the character of Ostap Bender from 12 Chairs, that is what Bender on Futurama is named after.
Oh. Really?
Yes.
Nice.
Just like Leela on Futurama is kind of a little bit of inspiration by Doctor Who, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Huh. I can see that, though.
Neat.
What, just because the character's a con artist?
Right? Bender is great. Bender is great. Anyway.
Out with the good air, in with the bad air.
Condolences
to Mr. Lee's family, but, yeah.
The baddest mofo to ever live.
Yeah. So what you need to do now, everybody at home, is go watch a Christopher Lee movie, and then follow it up with 12 Chairs, because Ron.
Don't
Moody.
Watch any of the Fu Manchu movies, though. Like,
no, don't.
Not those.
Don't.
Christopher
don't.
Lee
don't.
Movies.
Just don't stick do with like Two Towers or something.
Yeah, Two Towers is a good one.
Yeah, literally anything that he's done is good, except for like the Fu Man. Like they were all right. I mean, like the original one was like, okay, if you can get over all like that,
the racism,
all the yellow face stuff, it's good. But by the time they got to the Castle
kinda,
Fu Manchu,
kind of like watching the Doctor Who Aztecs episode. It's...
Yeah.
Why would you do that to yourself?
Yeah. So,
let's move forward.
Speaking
I guess.
Of ancient things in Central America,
right? So, if you've been anywhere out in public in the last 4 or 5 months, you've seen all sorts of stuff for Jurassic World. Yes, they promoted the hell out of this, and it finally got released, not this last weekend, but Friday, June 12th. And, well, you know how big this opening was?
How big was it?
It's so big that it made more money than any other movie that has ever been made ever. Yes, it
broke. On an opening weekend.
Yes, it shattered the Avengers record. The Avengers, of course, released in 2012, opened with $207.4 million. Jurassic World officially made $208.8 million during its opening weekend.
Holy crap.
By my calculations, literally everybody but me saw it opening weekend.
Everybody
in America saw this movie during the opening weekend.
So I want to point out, you know what movie used to hold this record? Jurassic Park.
The first Jurassic Park.
It did.
I guess it's only a... People like dinosaurs.
And they like Chris Pratt.
And this was probably the second best Jurassic Park movie.
It was pretty entertaining.
It's not as good as the original, and it's not a perfect film, but
it's got some problematic stuff. Yeah,
it's a shit ton better than so the Jurassic Park movies go in the following order in quality in my mind. The best one is obviously the original Jurassic Park, followed by Jurassic World, followed by the first half of The Lost World, followed by Jurassic Park 3, followed by the second half of The Lost World, because When they get off the island in The Lost World, it goes off the rails. And who killed the crew of the ship in Lost World? Who did it? Because the T-Rex was inside the hold.
Dracula.
That ship shows up and everybody's dead. Dracula. The T-Rex has not escaped. There are no other dinosaurs on the boat that we see. Did the raptors take it over, kill everyone, and steal a lifeboat?
Yes.
Are there raptors who went rowing off the coast of San Diego and have started running an ice cream parlor under the names Jacques Lafleur and Sandy Duncan?
Yes. I would watch the hell out of that movie.
I would too.
Lost World makes no sense. Because of stupid cut scenes that never got filmed.
I thought Jurassic World was pretty entertaining. Hell, yeah. It's no secret. Everyone knows how angry Raina can get going into a movie. She went to it with me so thinking she was going to hate it, and she left it saying, you know, I'd give that a solid C.
What I like about it, and this is, okay, so Jurassic Park has a very specific feel, and Lost World and Jurassic Park 3 really tried to like recapture that exact same feel of being alone on the island with all the dinosaurs, and they can't do it as well as the first time. So what I liked about Jurassic World is that because, like, say this is the park after like it's been open and operating for 10 years, you know, what happens when things go, like, it's a very different feel. It's, you know, and it's a different kind of movie. It's not as scary.
No.
And
it was a lot less gory.
Yeah.
It was like noticeably less gory.
And it's more of an action film than a thriller. The first one is a thriller. The fourth one is more of an action film starring dinosaurs. But you feel the characters are in genuine danger. You know, it's the actress whose name I always forget, who is the actress you hire when you can't afford Keira Knightley, had a very spectacular death. She was on Merlin.
I really liked I liked the fact that Chris Pratt didn't end up playing the funny guy, that he got to just play straight. Like,
yeah,
badass.
They got the guy
that
from New really Girl cool. to do that.
Well, yeah, it's nice to see Chris Pratt not just be typecast as, you know, the funny badass guy, and that he can just kind of play it straight now and
well
then.
It's what it comes down to, is that it's always easier for a comedic actor to go serious than a serious actor to go comedic.
True.
Comedy's harder than drama, and so it's it means that I went in there a couple things, and like I thought Chris Pratt did a perfectly fine job. I have no complaints about Chris Pratt's performance. It does mean I think that like it is sort of like someone bought an off-road vehicle and only drove it on the streets, though.
Mm.
You know what
that.
I mean? Like,
I can see it, but I enjoyed...
You know, that'll get the kids to school. It'll work. But that thing could do so many stuff. You're so not using 90% of what that thing can do. And so it's... And I think it's fine. You know, Chris Pratt doesn't have to be the funny guy in every movie he's in. And, you know, it's... But it's not like this dug into his acting chops either. You know?
I agree. I think he was fantastic in the movie, so...
Yeah, you know. No, it's... I have zero complaints about Chris Pratt's performance. I'm just, you know, but I always think of that perspective, you know. But overall, I liked it. Like I said, it's not as good as the original Jurassic Park, but it was a worthy successor.
Here, here. I'll be honest, I haven't seen it yet. I just think that it's incredible that this movie has it blew away the Avengers, who let's be honest here, you could do anything with the Avengers and they would bring in $190 million opening weekend, but the fact is that this movie,
well,
with Jurassic World, what you got with Jurassic World was you got everybody that loved the first Jurassic Park movie.
Mm.
And everybody who remembers the first Jurassic Park movie, you get B, people that have forgotten about the sequels or never saw the sequels and were like, oh, well, this looks like it could be good. And three, you get a whole new generation of people that are like, oh, I'm gonna go see this. Or from my understanding, there were some there were complaints that it was a bit too frightening for some kids. But, I mean, it's a PG-13 movie.
Oh, my God. It's not even half as scary as the first one was. And yeah. I saw that when I was five.
Yeah,
you have terrible parents. Anyways,
Happy
Father's Day, everybody.
these are the things that I'm hearing, like that.
Hey, Fur's the same age as me. You remember when Jurassic Park came out, right, Fur? You saw it.
Absolutely, I did. I was a little bit terrified of the giant T-Rex and everything. I was like the little 5-year-old's brain of mine was just like this. Conflicting because, oh my God, dinosaurs, but oh my God, this is terrifying at the same time.
My brother went screaming out of Masters of the Universe, like at that age, like when Skeletor popped up after.
Yes! Fear me, children!
No, Frank Langella's like Skeletor.
Yeah, it wasn't
I'm not kidding. Skeletor. Frank Langella as Skeletor. Look it up.
It's an actual movie, you guys. It's on Blu-ray.
But
you can get a Blu-ray of that movie.
My point is that you guys had terrible parents letting you see that movie at five.
Hey, you know, I'll be honest. If I am going to take my child to a movie, I'm going to see it first before I can make the call. Like, I took Ophelia to see Guardians of the Galaxy, but only after I had seen it and said, like, okay, I'm fine with my 5-year-old seeing this.
Hey, growing up in the 90s, one of the key parts of growing up in the 90s was growing up on early 90s and 80s action movies that were mysteriously rated PG for things that we would get, like, PG-13s or even R ratings for.
Well,
traumatizing kids with Indiana Jones is something I live for.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You can't tell me that.
Here's the thing, though. PG-13 didn't really exist until the mid to late 90s.
Until after Temple of Doom.
Yep. Once Temple of Doom came out.
That's late 80s.
That's late 80s, yeah.
I could have sworn that PG-13 didn't start popping up until 93, 94.
No, it was...
If you see me looking around like a crazy person, it's because my pop filter has gone missing from my microphone. I don't know what happened to it. It's not important. The show's working without it, but...
Poltergeist.
Anyways. Yeah, Poltergeist, was the first PG-13 movie.
No. I mean, Poltergeist stole his pop filter. I know nothing about that movie.
I think Poltergeist might have been the first.
Found it right after that movie. I don't know if that got a PG-13.
Technically,
anyway.
Windscreen. I know, but it raises a pop filter.
Well, anyway, yeah, Jurassic World. It was a big, dumb, stupid dinosaur movie, but I enjoyed it.
I'm sorry. Red Dawn was the first ever PG-13 movie. So I was standing.
Oh, God. Wonderful.
1984 was the first.
Yeah, because
I'm sorry, I was wrong.
I know
that.
Because I know when I saw Batman Returns that was PG-13.
Oh, so. I need to rewatch that.
Anyway, Jurassic World, now the biggest opening weekend movie of all time.
You know, it's great to have a Jurassic Park film as number one because everything needs to feel like nostalgia tripping. Because, you know,
this is the year we're getting a new Mad Max and a new Terminator and a new Jurassic Park and a new Star Wars.
You know what, though? There's
a Bush and a Clinton running for office.
it keeps going. Because, okay, so most of you who had Super Nintendos, so old people like me, well, actually, I didn't, but I went straight from 8-bit Nintendo to. I had friends who had Super Nintendos. Many people remember with fondness the SNES RPG Earthbound, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so not these two bozos I do a show with.
I played Earthbound.
but old
not
geeks
much
like
of it,
me,
but I played
people
it.
My age. Well, most what a lot of people in America don't know is that Earthbound's Japanese name is actually Mother 2. It is the sequel to an NES game called Mother. Now, for decades, people have been asking Nintendo to release the original Mother some way, somehow. They almost did it once. And actually, back when the game was new, they actually made an American localization that they just never released. Well, my favorite thing is... this is literally the game that people talk about when people say, that'll come out about as soon as Mother comes out. Well, guess what, everybody? Mother came out
flying
as Earthbound Beginnings. Last Sunday, Nintendo announced they're putting it out and immediately put it up out in the Virtual Console for the, you know, just there.
Why not?
Now, E3 also brought us another universe-shattering thing because the other video game...
I'm so happy!
Everybody says, you know when that'll be out? Yeah. You know what? Shenmue 3 will come out before that happens. Well, guess what game is happening?
Tell me where the sailors are.
Shenmue 3.
I hear,
do you know where I can find some sailors?
I hear, I am looking for some sailors. Do you know if any sailors hang out at the Tomato convenience store?
It's... oh my God, Shenmue 3. And so Shenmue 3, it got launched with a Kickstarter, but it was the fastest funded Kickstarter.
9 hours.
9 hours. It
Nine
made
hours.
$2 million.
That's beautiful.
So Shenmue 3 is happening. Like, I remember when my old roommate imported, like, I think it was the European version because it had English subtitles for the Dreamcast of Shenmue 2. Later, Shenmue 2 did come out for the Xbox, but, like,
Which is what I had it on. I bought a Dreamcast specifically for Shenmue.
Yeah. No, it's, so my old roommate, Ben, imported Shenmue 2 for his Dreamcast and like went through all the rigmarole of transferring his save data through the VMU from Shenmue 1 and then all your stuff gets stolen at the beginning of the game.
Yep.
Took him hours to like convert it because it was the European version.
It's
so
beautiful.
Now I would assume that because Shenmue 3 is coming out that we're gonna get to see the first two again because the whole like that was kind of the first your decisions matter.
Yeah, it's Shenmue.
Kind of
okay,
game.
So like that originally,
it was also the most expensive video game ever made at the time.
That game has a really weird history where it was like an offshoot of the Virtua games, and then it turned into a whole thing. And originally it was supposed to be, I think, like six games. And then, but the Dreamcast dying meant that it died because even though Shenmue 2 got brought over for the Xbox. development was dead. It was just a localization and, you know, a port. Like, no one was working on Shenmue 3 even when that came out for the Xbox. So it was just, like, dead. It was gone. It was, you know, dead in the water. And it's kind of... But here's the thing. So since Duke Nukem Forever came out, like, 5 years ago or whatever, and now we're getting Shenmue 3 and Mother came out, what am I supposed to use as a metaphor for never coming out?
The Last Guardian. Wait, shit, no.
It's coming out.
So, Final Fantasy VII remake? No, wait.
No,
damn
wait,
it.
That's happening.
Yeah, that's happening too.
That's happening too.
Kingdom Hearts 3, that's a thing now.
The Phantom Console.
The Phantom Console.
The Phantom. I mean, sure, OnLive did it and then sold themselves to Sony, but sort of.
I'm excited for Shenmue 3. I don't think I can describe. Like,
What I love is people who listen to the Famicom Dojo podcast. If you listen to their Denshi Mail episode, their Denshi Mail for episode 120, it's a separate MP3 that they put out in their feed. If you go to FamicomDojo.tv, their most recent episode was right the Friday before all these announced, and they literally said that Mother was never going to come out. And also said, I'll wait for that for Shenmue 3. Ah, that'll never happen. Like, literally, in that episode,
that is
2 days,
true.
3 days, two so, days before this news. So
don't go to Sean Corse if you need an oracle.
So I'm going to make a list of things that I want
to happen,
Sean
and
Vink
to
deny will ever happen. And then that guarantees they're going to happen, right? I mean, that's how this universe works.
Apparently. Sean and Vink are the worst foreseers.
Maybe with any luck, since HD remasters seem to be the big thing right now, maybe we'll get an HD remaster of Shenmue 1 and 2. And
I would think that's going to – I would assume that's going to happen because it
okay,
it does
so, –
it's an overarching span of – it's an overarking storyline. There are things that happen that in the second game that were affected by things that happened in the first one. I would assume we're going to get both games
released. That actually might be really complicated to do. Okay, so the reason why Shenmue 3 is happening is because the creator of Shenmue has the rights to the game because –
Oh, does he not have the rights to the first two?
Sega doesn't have the rights to the name Shenmue anymore.
Oh.
But they probably still own the copyrights on those first two games.
Okay.
Sega, just play nice for a little bit.
Well, I'm honestly, like, I don't know what the legal situation would be there. Whereas what they can do with Shenmue 3 is just do a cutscene at the beginning that summarizes the first two games.
They might
and
have
as long
to.
As it's original footage made for Shenmue 3, there's no legal issue.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Somebody who's smarter than us, go to nerdandtie.com, click on the contact form, and let us know, because
we'd love to know.
Yeah, I really want to know this.
Barely know what we're talking about on this one. But
if,
I have a Playdia.
Especially if you're a lawyer that knows copyright law.
I have a Playdia, and that makes me
smart. Again with the Playdia.
It's over my shoulder. It's right there.
We know it's over your shoulder, Trey. We hear about it every episode.
Right next to my old Texas Instruments computer.
Oh my God!
Which I think might have
Nick. Do you want to talk about Transformers while we're at it? We can keep continuity going through all of our episodes.
You know, I do have my three best Megatrons all within arm's reach.
Well,
where
you
I'm
know,
BotCon's so.
Been going on this weekend. Have you seen the new?
There's so many.
Seen the new Fort Max?
Exciting.
You seen the new Fort Max?
Yes, that
head looks a lot like Spike's power suit.
I'm excited. I'm excited for. There's an all-female combiner now.
Yeah,
her name is Victorion.
Victorion,
it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry for her.
Are we good?
What's that for? You asked.
Are we good?
Skylink! Voyager class Skylink!
So, speaking of things that have taken a long time to happen. So, back in 2011... it was announced that HBO was developing an American Gods TV series. Of course, American Gods being one of Neil Gaiman's probably best novels that he's ever written, and probably one of the better novels ever. Definitely one that everybody should read. Of course, it kind of ended up in development hell. after the initial announcement, things went wrong. They couldn't get it done. Just wasn't happening. Well, it was announced on June 17th that Starz has picked up the series and the project and is going forward with it, with Ryan Fuller as the head writer of the show.
I think we skipped a little bit of the story there. Because we should point out that Starz actually originally picked this up a year ago.
A year ago, that's what
they
it
picked
is,
it
yes.
up for development last July. I know, because Nerd and Ty reported on it a year ago. like 11 months ago, we reported on it. But it's been radio silence. And all the same people were involved. Neil Gaiman, Brian Fuller, like these names were like the same people. And a third guy whose name is escaping me.
Michael Green of Gotham fame.
Yeah, well, he wasn't of Gotham fame a year ago.
Can you really call it fame, though? I mean,
well, but it's
people watch it.
A financial success. And then we found out this last week that the show's been picked up for a full series order, even though nothing's been shot yet.
Have you guys said what the show is yet?
It's American Gods.
American Gods.
Okay, did I miss? No, yeah. I was making sure for the audience. I didn't catch.
Yeah, no.
I didn't say
American Gods.
I mentioned
American
it.
American Gods.
I mentioned it.
By Neil Gaiman.
Anyways, but no, they're going to be starting.
Which
filming
I will
fairly,
now begin reading to you.
They started. They're going to be starting to film it soon. They haven't announced any cast members yet. But Starz is going forward with the show, and I don't know. But I really hope that it gets filmed on location in numerous locations across Wisconsin or Minnesota. They've got to at least film the House on the Rock stuff at the House on the Rock, right?
Yeah, well, there's,
or they
there's
can film
no...
outside the House on the Rock and then go somewhere else.
For those of you not familiar with the book, large portions of it take place in rural Wisconsin.
Woo!
There's a large section specifically set at House on the Rock, which is a
giant museum.
It's
basically
a thing. It's like
that's amazing.
It's a structure that would be best described as designed by Frank Lloyd Wrong. The actual architect was a rival of Frank Lloyd Wright. It's a bizarre. I've actually never gone. I've just seen tons of photos from friends of mine who have gone there. And I spent my whole life, not my whole life in Wisconsin because I live in Indiana, but most of my life in Wisconsin.
I've never been there.
But the amazing thing about, I mean, because what a lot of people don't know is that Neil Gaiman lives in Menominee, Wisconsin.
He's
I can say it because he said it in the USA. So if you write that on his Wikipedia page, it'll get taken off immediately into the outside Minneapolis, except for the fact that he said it repeatedly in, like, interviews.
Yeah, I've actually, on my way to a wedding in Menominee, I've driven past his house.
Yeah, it's not a secret. But Menominee, Wisconsin is about 20 minutes away from where Fur is sitting right now.
That's
if you drive the 20 speed
minutes.
Limit.
That way.
Yeah. So he's like
that way.
He wrote two books pretty close to each other, which one was the American kind of fantasy book, and then the other one was his British fantasy book, which are, you know, Neverwhere is his ode to, you know, London, and then
it's really
American
good.
Gods is his ode to effectively rural Wisconsin. So it's And it's a phenomenal book. It's like if The Long Dark Season of the Soul was written seriously. My fellow Douglas Adams nerds, we'll get that. It really is. It's the exact same concept. Just told from a very different perspective. Odin shows up in both. So it's my favorite book. It's the localities, though, like, because he spent a lot of time in rural Wisconsin. I've spent a lot of my life living, like, in the exact kinds of towns that he based one of the primary locations off of. It's just sort of like it's he captures the experience perfectly, and it's that world that I used to live in and miss occasionally, and it's a good thing.
It's gonna be I'm excited to see it on screen. I think Starz has a pretty decent track record with series.
Yeah, well, and it's a rich world that really kind of begs to be explored more than it has been. Mm-hmm. And we still don't know who's going to play Shadow, the lead. Because, again, nothing's been shot. They ordered it to full series. It must have just been based off of the scripts. Because they've been working on it for a year. And so what else could they... If they don't have any cast, what else could they have other than words on a page?
And, they have the fact that Brian Fuller is attached to it. And I don't think he's ever done anything badly.
Right, I mean, right. Like, Brian Fuller's writing the script.
It's everything he's done has been golden.
With Neil Gaiman executive producing and guiding the show, and then Gotham guy show running. And while it's true I'm not a huge fan of Gotham, I trust he will do perfectly fine with Brian Fuller providing the words. Because let's all face it, Gotham would be much better if Brian Fuller was writing it and Neil Gaiman was executive producing.
Right. I'd be down with that.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I think Gotham would be better with practically anyone changed in staff. Except for the cast. The cast are all good. They're all wonderful. Anyway.
So anyways, Nick.
That's something to look forward to.
We haven't let Nick talk about something for a long time.
It's been a while.
It's been a really long time. So I think we should let Nick talk. I think we should let Nick talk about the Cyborg 009 versus Devilman thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick.
That's exciting. Myself and a lot of the other people who just love old school anime nearly blew a gasket in the last couple of days. Because
I'm going somewhere else with that.
No. Here's the thing. Cyborg 009, pretty legendary manga and then several anime series group about an international team of cyborgs saving the day. Very old. It's from like 1964. Has a pretty big cult following. Anytime we get new Cyborg 009 stuff, I get excited. Because everyone knows how much I love Shotaro Ishinomori, who also created Kikaider. Yay!
Where did he park that motorcycle?
Someday I'm going to find Daisuke Bon and ask. And then we'll know. Yep. That's my answer. But, so it was pretty exciting because a while back it was announced that there was going to be a new Cyborg 009 animated movie, and we were all freaking out. Well, the same studio at the same time announced that they were going to be doing a new movie about one of Go Nagai's classic characters as well, the Devil Man. Bit of a scary anti-hero. I actually don't know a whole ton about Devil Man of this pairing. I think I own a VHS of the OVA, but I haven't actually watched it.
I've never watched Devilman, but I have seen plenty of ads for it over my decades of nerddom.
Oh, dear God. Yeah, I know it's a Go Nagai thing, so...
he created Madzinger.
Yeah. And Cutie Honey and various other things that are a little less wholesome than Madzinger. Aww.
I went with Madzinger.
But it got weirder when we found out that these are not two separate movies. No, this is going to be a versus movie. So the Cyborg 009 team is taking on Devilman because, awesome, I guess. Although even Go Nagai, when asked about it, said, this does seem like they're mixing oil and water.
Honest to God, sounds like if someone did a RoboCop Constantine crossover.
Yeah, these are two very different characters. Because, like, Devilman is entirely supernatural and, you know, out there demon stuff. Whereas Cyborg 009 is, it's what it sounds like. It's cyborgs. Yeah. It's mostly, it's sci-fi superhero kind of thing.
That's why I went with RoboCop.
Mm-hmm. No, that's cyborg. It's a very good comparison because they're very different. I don't know how this is going to work, but I'm kind of excited for it because the director has a long history of directing a lot of adaptations of both Ishinomori and Go Nagai properties, including Mazen Kaiser SKL, speaking of Matzinger, and the fantastic 2000s remake of Cyborg 009, which actually aired on Cartoon Network a few years ago.
Well, what I'm hoping is that this opens the door for batshit insane old anime series crossing over with each other.
Because oh my
I'd love to see, like, Urusei Yatsura versus Gundam. Or, you know, like...
Well, we had a Detective Conan versus Lupin the Third a couple of years back. That's on Hulu right now. You can watch that.
All right, let's see. What else is...
Well, hey, Trey, your Ranma half Pat Labor thing might actually happen.
Ranma one half Pat Labor, that would work. Let's see here. Project Aiko Giant Robo.
Oh, I love both of those. I don't think I'd love them together, though.
Let's see. What else can I dig out of
that? Oh, you could awkwardly combine Macross with a couple of other Tatsunoko anime that came out around this. Oh.
Riding Bean Venus Wars.
You're killing me. I don't... But Yoshikazu Yasu, he goes to
Mai Sanakaku and Iser 3.
Okay, Shameless Otaku is going to be the only one listener of this show who's going to have seen both of those. I hope you know that.
Ah, well. God, well, you know, the problem is I'm remembering shows and forgetting titles.
I'm actually, for some reason, I'm drawing blanks, which is terrible, because normally I take pride in being the
Those Who Hunt Elves and Record of Lotus War.
Oh, actually, that kind of works.
No, maybe. That's why it would actually be something I'd want to watch.
I'd watch that. Oh, boy.
Let's see here. God,
Dragon Ball versus Voltron.
Let's see here. Let's go with something more current. Love Hina and Witch Hunter Robin.
Current as in the top selling titles of the Bandai catalog in 2002.
Well, no, I said more current. Well, it's more current than, like, you know, Urusei Yatsura.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Kimagure Orange Road. And Bible Black. No, wait.
They're both on a roll. I'm just going to let them keep going.
Nadesco. And, well, anything I'd watch.
Gungrave versus Haruhi Suzumiya.
I would watch that. I would watch that. That's...
The problem I have is that I'm confusing made up names I came up with for unconventional and real shows, and I'm trying to remember which one's the real one.
It's really Cyborgs. You see, anytime I bring up the thing is, I'm worried about if this will even get a U.S. release, like going back to the actual movie, because like Cyborg Devilman, I know, like I have VHSs of Devilman here in the basement. And I don't know if those ever got re-released, but like Cyborg
Mermaid
Zero
Saga and Chobits.
That might work. But no, going back to the thing, like Cyborg 009, even when it got that that Toonami run, the actual DVD, the DVDs of the series, Sony only put out the first 9 episodes. They dubbed the entire damn show, but I can only buy 9 episodes of it. And the dub was not good at all. I mean,
it's good that you can only buy 9 episodes.
No, yeah, but the Japanese cast are fantastic. And, I mean, it's on the DVD. Like, basically the only place where I can still find it are people who recorded the Cartoon Network dub. And if you guys have ever wanted to hear Tai from Digimon, if you've ever wanted to hear that voice coming out of a 22-year-old, go ahead. But I hate that. And I don't want to see that again. So, yeah.
Digimon and Guy, the ultimate in science friction. That's Tiffany Grant's first anime role.
Oh, Jesus. I thought it was Devil Hunter Yoko.
No, I'm pretty sure. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Guy came out second.
Oh, good God. Oh, boy.
Kevin, okay, so for those of you who have never heard of Guy, the Ultimate in Science Friction, it's not as pornographic as the title makes it seem, but it's pornographic to a very solid degree. Vink.
Not unlike Devil Hunter Yoko.
The tape is the tape, the VHS tape was red, plastic. Vink owned it. Vink, of course, of Famicom Dojo, but who also was a co-founder of NoBrainCon with myself. Vink of Famicom Dojo owned it, and he brought it to WestCon 5, a defunct science fiction convention that doesn't exist anymore, but their guest that year was Tiffany Grant, and had Tiffany Grant autograph it.
Jesus.
And her first response was, "Oh my God, no one has ever asked me to sign a copy of this in my life."
Jesus Christ, Vink. You know, she remembers Vink, like, by name, so maybe this is part of why.
Well, she's been to, like, half of the no-brand cons ever. Well, it's also Vink was a lot of the guest liaisons for NoBrand Con 1, where she was also a guest. And so he spent a lot of time with her that weekend.
Yeah, she
including
thought
driving her. Like, if you ever want to hear a great story about, like, a convention, like, stuff falling apart for a con and getting a guest home, ask Sean Orange and Vink. This was them together. The story of getting Tiffany Grant home after the first NoBrand Con. Oh, it involves a plane they had tickets for being full and not letting her on, and them having to drive her to another airport to meet her connecting flight and having to try to beat a plane.
That's a beautiful story.
Yeah, it's she retells this story. Like I've got video of her retelling this story from like NoBrand Con 2009, I think. But yeah, it's a you should get one of those two guys to tell you that story because it's a magnificent tale. But, you know, that's what happens, you know, convention staffs that know how to do their job right can adapt to bad situations.
Really now?
Really. And I'm very smooth in my transitions because we're going to talk
that's
about convention.
Thing.
We're going to talk about convention that was not so good at dealing with an issue and continues to fail at dealing with this issue.
Even now.
So, last weekend in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, I can say the names of places in Canada, there was the convention Saskatoon Blitz. It was a two-day convention, Saturday, Sunday. The expected attendance was, I think, 1,200, but I don't know if they got that or not, but that was what they were telling people they were trying for. It was their fifth year running. They've been doing this a while. And they had a little bit of an issue with their artist alley, or as I like to call it, how not to run an artist alley. The artist, who she works under the name Lyric, or Lyric, L-Y-E-R-I-C. I'm going to say Lyric and hope it's right. And if it's not, I'm sorry. But she was an artist reserved, and I don't know if it's still up on the webpage. Like, she was literally the first name listed as a confirmed artist on their artist alley. Skylar Yu, I think, is what it is, because her real first name is Skylar. But I'm going to refer to her as Lyric because I'm not a dick. Anyways, so she got to the convention. There was a bunch of confusing stuff with her payment. And all that stuff got mixed around, and all he said, she said stuff, and I'm not going to bother with that, because even though I believe her, you know, that's anybody, you know, people forget stuff. She got to the convention and found the table number she'd been assigned ahead of time. Someone else was sitting there, which, needless to say, is...
That's messed up.
That's messed up. Also, the Artist Alley, for reasons defying any sort of logic or reason, was set up classroom style. Now, if you've never heard this term in regards to a convention layout, it's because nobody uses it because it's stupid. Classroom style is where the rows of tables are single row, open to the aisle behind them, with that as a single row. So think of it like rows in a classroom. So if you're saying to yourself, hey, that means there is no area behind the table that the artist can keep things, keep their cash box securely, and not just literally be have their back sitting in an open walking aisle, you're right. And it's literally the stupidest way to set up an artist alley. But she got there, and her table was not hers. She went and talked to the artist alley head, and they did provide her a table and set one up. But there were a myriad of things where she could not get a straight answer about when the artist alley, which was in a room, closed. This is important because the artist alley had to tear down at the end of the night, because even though they put it in a room, which usually you put things in a room like that so they don't have to tear it on every night. Well, that room was being used for the dance that night, so they had to literally unset the whole artist alley. Then the next day, she gets back there, and that new table she had been given the day before, which was, again, not the original table she was supposed to have, and the contract did state that they would not rearrange tables in the artist alley, but, you know. She got back the next day, and another artist was seated at her new table, and apparently that's where the artist alley had put the other artist.
This is unreal.
And
it's astounding.
So
this is incredible.
So anyways, so there was an entire situation. Like, Lyric has put her whole detailed account. We'll link our article in the show notes, which links to her article, including one of their staffers, like, putting physical hands on the shoulder. Like, they were upset about this. And so, like, the Saskatoon Blitz staffer put his hands on the shoulders, like, physically on the artist's boyfriend. Like you do not freaking physically touch people. Now, and so she got into a discussion trying to figure out when the artist alley was closing. And according to her, she was nothing but polite. Witnesses have said that no voices were raised. Like, you know, no one else could listen into the conversation. But no one was, like, yelling or anything. And the Saskatoon Blitz staff decided, rather than de-escalate the situation, to escort her out of the convention by security.
Awesome.
Which, you know, if a person's nonviolent and you are at this point, you have failed as a staff running a con. Because I will tell you, if I escorted out every vendor who, like, was slightly irritated with me when I was running a con, like, oh my God, half the vendor room would have been gone. Because you de-escalate the situation. You don't escalate it. Don't be stupid. Anyways, things actually get worse. The artist lyric, she took the Tumblr and just wrote her all experiences, and maybe she was a little angry in them, but honest to God, all the the whole thing with, like, tables switching around and all of that, and like, even if you take a look at, like, the worst case scenario, that, like, maybe she really was belligerent, and, you know, like, even then, these guys were still really incompetently running that artist alley where half this stuff could have happened in the first place, right?
Yeah, it was just a matter of who it happened to,
right?
Really.
So
it was going to happen.
Afterwards, so we wrote an article about this originally at this point, and I reached out to Saskatoon Blitz's staff and tried to get a response. Afterwards, Saskatoon Blitz is on their private staff group. A staffer had leaked screenshots of a discussion on the staff group in which the con owner, the con chair's husband, used the phrase, I'm going to censor the swears.
Yes, please do.
F this B right on the P.
Yeah.
I sound like
bad.
I'm saying this to an 8-year-old. To which other people joined in, and
with some other graphic some stuff that you can only imagine how bad
it was. The con chair also added to the conversation, Laura Patricia Ha, who is, as far as I can tell, legally responsible for the convention, because there doesn't seem to be a corporation set up, but so it has to, like, nope, arse no lube broom handle, to continue the implications of sexual statements about an artist. And, like, there's, like, it's...
What charming people.
What charming people.
What, like, not total scuzzbuckets?
They have released. They then also so after this was leaked, they went to make several open statements and deleted one of, like, posted it, deleted it, posted a modified version that made some weird, like, unlawful entry claims, and then deleted that one, and then posted the original statement again, pretty much, which was greetings, Saskoon Blitz fans. We are writing this to issue an official statement regarding some events that conspired this weekend regarding the expulsion of an artist from our event. The artist was removed on grounds of staff harassment, which, as far as most witnesses can say, didn't really happen, and breaking event policy, which we do not wish to discuss publicly. There's a grammatical error. They ended up sentence instead of sentence. But we are dealing with concerns privately and striving towards a solution. In regards to the content that has been circulated on social media regarding to the statements of the F and the B and the P, we would like to issue a formal apology to members involved. We in no way intended harm, threats, or speak ill of any party. We recognize the convention lacks professionalism and is very inappropriate. Saskatoon Blitz strives to create an inclusive and positive family-friendly event for all of our attendees. Okay, so here's the thing. All three of us have been working conventions for a really long time.
Yeah.
Nick and I both co-founded different events, and Fur was the con director for the event that I co-founded eventually when he got old enough. And
when I became a big boy.
Yeah. None of us, when we were in charge of an event, would have allowed this sort of statement ever in a staff discussion. If a person, when I was convention director of No Brand Con, when I was frickin' events manager, any of the lower positions I handled, when Fur was con director, or when Nick was on the board of directors for Daisho Con, I think it's safe to say if any of us had been in an environment where that was stated in the staff discussions, something would have been said that would not have been acceptable behavior.
Mm-hmm. No, because call it what it is. It's essentially those statements are essentially rape threats.
Yeah. Even if you take a look at it in its best light, they're still misogynistic comments which have no place in any convention's culture. And the very fact that this is coming from the head of the convention and her husband indicates that this is a systematic problem in their event and in their culture, and it has no place in our community. But, you know, they're sorry that those screenshots leaked. But anyways,
that's essentially what it is. They're not sorry that they made those comments. They're sorry that people saw them. And they're terrible. Terrible people. Saskatoon Blitz, you are terrible.
This isn't even done yet, because what they did after that was, because so many people were calling them out on their BS on their Facebook page, they deleted their Facebook page. Because some of our volunteers said they were getting harassed, except no. First off, the only reason anyone would have known anybody's name through Facebook is off of these screenshots, which weren't on the Facebook page. Secondly, the Facebook page shields any direct names through the Facebook page. That's how Facebook page you operate as an alias. You know, it's if I don't switch my username back over to myself, you can't tell that it's me posting in comments on the Nerd and Tie Facebook page. So they did that too, which effectively, of course, was stupid for them, because it prevents them from controlling the conversation, because Lord knows people are going to keep talking about this. But they also reposted their official statement. There have been other artists who have confirmed the story about the table switching and all that stuff, including the fact that Lyric was polite with staff. And then finally, Saskatoon Blitz got back to me and pretty much said that they disabled the Facebook page, you know, because of harassment, threats to volunteer staff, included repeated links to personal information. You can lock that down without deleting the page. Are you guys, not sure how Facebook works? This is literally, they try to blame the scrum. She tries to blame the person for being disgruntled, but I sent back trying to, ask about the miscommunication on Hours of the Artist Alley and about tables giving away. And the response was single line, no tables were given away, except for the fact that, which is either a purposeful misinterpretation of my question. Because, yes, obviously she was given a table afterwards, but was then her table, was given away a second time. And even if they were going to provide her with a new table on Sunday, that was still, That's not what I was. But I asked for clarification, and I got no response. And again, I've gotten no response about the change of hours. And honest to God, I don't understand why they haven't just said sorry.
Right?
That's an awful lot of letters in a word. That's like five letters.
Saskatoon Blitz has had two key opportunities to nip this whole friggin' thing in the bud. The first opportunity was at Con when they could have just taken a even if she was angry, even if Lyric was angry and disgruntled, could have just taken it, said, "I'm sorry," and moved on and not kicked her out. Secondly, even if they had kicked her out, this is what you say on Monday. This is it. This is what you should have written, Saskatoon Blitz, if you're listening to this. "We would like to formally apologize to the artist Lyric for our actions this weekend. Our staff members overreacted to a situation and acted inappropriately. We hope you can accept our apology and we can move forward in building a stronger community." Just put that statement out. Just do it. Because you know what? Okay, so what happens here is even if Lyric doesn't want to take the apology, which I wouldn't if I were her because they're a bunch of dicks, but suddenly everyone else on the internet gets to look at you and say, like, oh, they said they're sorry.
At least they tried.
They tried, and then suddenly it softens everything. When you hardline, when you snap into an us versus them, you are splintering your own community. You're either, like, people either have to side with you or with the artist instead of someone being able to take a middle ground where people are much happier. Like, mm-hmm. Like this is, like, PR 101. Why can't geeks do damage control? I'm going to repost my 2012 article about this, like, this week that I wrote on TRH Online about, like, I think I wrote about AkiCon, of all people. Like, why can't you? Like, rule one.
Yeah, are we going to have, like, Next year, we're going to have a March Madness tournament of worst convention situations.
Oh. Like,
oh, man.
Like, what is wrong with, like...
This gets a one seed. AkiCon gets a one seed. What else is... Who else is getting a one seed? The sexual harassment con from a couple weeks ago gets a one
MomoCon.
Seed.
MomoCon.
MomoCon gets a one seed.
It's a big con too. So
yeah, I just couldn't. I just couldn't
remember. AnimeCon.org as a whole gets.
Oh man, they're going to be a hard to beat.
They're going
to
be their own bracket. AnimeCon.org and Black Materia, just one bracket off to the side.
Yep. Oh God.
Oh, man,
that's
stupid. So,
and you know, I've gotten a comment from somebody this last week. They were like, "Fur, why do you only cover bad shit that cons do?" I'm like, you know what?
Because no one else does.
Cons shouldn't be rewarded for doing things properly.
You know what? Here's the thing. Here's the thing is that I would love to write a story about a convention doing something like phenomenal. Like, I don't know what that would be, though. See, the issue is that if a con is a wonderful experience, they've done it right, and that's not news. You know, you don't write the news story about guy feeds his kid.
Yep.
So, yeah, like, a con's job is to be a wonderful experience.
Yeah, I know cons that I thought of as really crappy cons that people had a lot of fun at. So, you know...
I can name three off the top of my head that have been terrible conventions, but I've had a blast
like,
at.
Like, think of it this way. DashCon, as a massive failure last year, had a better run artist alley than Saskatoon Blitz. Saskatoon Blitz did everything else right, except for this situation, and then obviously their staff culture that has allowed it to happen. But, like...
Even on the DashCon thing, I actually had the opportunity to talk to some people who staffed DashCon yesterday. Weird day it was yesterday. And they straight up said the attendees at DashCon were some of the best behaved attendees they've ever had.
DashCon is not the worst such event that ever happened. It had it had incompetent people at the top who screwed over one of their own partners and were awful with money. And you had like three people who were terrible, and then everyone else just dealing with the fallout. And the only reason why it became the big meme and the headlines was, besides the fact that they lent themselves to the most ridiculous visual of a tiny ball pit in the center of an empty room, which... The optics, guys. You got to think of the optics. But the reason why is just because it happened. It was a convention focused on a social media website in the modern age, which meant the entire thing was being watched by people in that social media website, which means it blew up automatically. And frankly, everyone was shaking their heads. The people who hated Tumblr saw it as an example of the ridiculousness of the people on Tumblr. The people on Tumblr were like, oh my God, this is a ridiculous representation of our community. Like, literally, nobody... But it really wasn't the worst convention that's even happened in Chicago, like, in the past decade. Like, it's... Like... But it got the focus. Now, Saskatoon... Now, if you want to talk about why do we cover the bad stuff, is because every other convention news blog on the internet reads, like, press releases from conventions. It's guest announcements and everyone being happy. And guess what? It all looks the same. If you want to know the good side of conventions, we talk about it on the podcast. We talk about our fun experiences at conventions on the podcast all the time.
Pretty much every time we go to a convention, we tell stories from it.
But the problem is that there is no when bad things happen at conventions, when bad things happen with convention staffs, there is no credible neutral voice for that. Things either sometimes will get covered by a big blog like the Mary Sue, you know, that covers like a whole bunch of other stuff, or you'll get personal accounts. So a lot of the, like, which are always going to be biased. And what we do is we try to break down those, that negative stuff with a sourced, researched, neutral point of view. And I think it's important for there to be sites that analyze and look at the community like this, because again, if a con's doing it right, we'll talk about how great it was on the podcast, but we don't need an article to tell you that GeekCon's going to be awesome in August.
And I think we're all going to be there, aren't we?
Yeah.
We are.
Like, but we don't need to tell you that beyond us saying, it's awesome. What else is there? That's not an article. I wrote a detailed review of Comic-Con Purdue, which was a critique and a review. Like, we might review more events that are new and that you might be interested in, if they're interesting. But really, the negative stuff, the reason why we write about that a lot is because no one else is going to write about it in a neutral voice if we don't do it.
Frankly, it's been a while since I've even had, I imagine maybe you could say, like, there's some positive stuff we could talk about if a con really went above and beyond. But, like... Yeah. It's been years since, for example, I remember Daishokan did our 48-hour straight live stream for Haiti. Like, I haven't seen anyone do anything like that since then.
If you go back to, say, and I think the reason why what we do is important is because if you go back to when there was a registered sex offender staffing a couple of conventions in the Twin Cities, that had been passed around social media. People were telling that to their friends. And it wasn't until we wrote the article that something was done about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to make that sound like we are relatively important in certain communities. And, you know, this is we were just enough of a megaphone to deal with that. And it's because we weren't Bob. You know, we posted an article with researched screenshots showing the staff credits and showing the sex offender registry. You know, it's, I believe in transparency, plain and simple.
Yeah. Agreed.
Saskatoon Blitz, you were awful.
But you want to talk about, terrible. You want to talk quickly about some good stuff with conventions?
Yeah.
Why don't we?
All right. Well, first off, next weekend. So the weekend between episodes of Nerd and Tie, I'm going to be a guest at a convention in West Plains, Missouri.
Awesome.
That's right. OzCon is a gaming convention in West Plains, Missouri. It is It's being run by a little group there. It's June 26th through 28th. And I'm a guest, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And so if you're in Missouri or, you know, any of the surrounding areas, you should come because it's going to be awesome and I'm going to be there. And that sounds like a lot of fun now, doesn't it?
Why not?
Yeah. I will also say that there is a con in Milwaukee also at that same weekend, Nexus Game Fair. It's a gaming con in Milwaukee. And if you're in Wisconsin, you should definitely try to check that out. They invited us to come, and we tried
we
to find a way.
We almost were able to. We did our best.
Yeah, we just couldn't find a way to work it out to get there, mostly because, like, they contacted us, like, a week after I signed the contract with OzCon. if you're in Milwaukee, you should check out Nexus Game Fair. So that same weekend in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And, let us know how it was. Because it's their first year, and we haven't been yet. So go.
Well, we wish them all the luck. So
yeah,
it should be a lot of fun. I mean, I've been to two gaming conventions in my life, and both of them have been an absolute blast. So
only two?
Yeah. I don't go to many gaming conventions.
That actually surprises me.
Well, because I went to StateCon for like the three years, you know, for the many years that it was running. And always had a lot of fun there. And then I think I showed up to one other one that was here in Eau Claire as a one-off. And apparently there's going to be another one here in Eau Claire later this year.
Clearwater Con, which, by the way, that was actually a name proposed for Nobrand Con back in the day.
But as far as nobody knows anything about it, so.
Yeah, no. What the heck is the deal with that guy? We don't know who's running it. We know it's July 25th at the Plaza. And I'll admit, I'm a little skeptical about any first-year convention. That's renting a space as expensive as the Plaza for a one-day con. Like, for an overnight con, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if your con's multi-day, you need places to sleep. But there's probably cheaper places, like the Expo Center or something, you know. It's like the Sports Center that's over by Grover Park. Probably better.
Who knows?
Or the fairgrounds. Anything. Memorial High School.
Did we say Davies Center yet?
No, not yet.
Davies Center's
actually pretty expensive. Plus, it might be cheaper than Davies Center for a non-student organization.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, I don't want to be critical of people who I don't know who they are. You know, it's a little surprising for, for something, for me not to know them.
Right?
Anyway,
just give us a light, Clearwater Con. If you are a convention that if you're not run by the people I suspect you're run by, I won't have a problem talking about you in a positive light on Nerd and Tie.
If you're dicks, we won't.
Yeah.
We don't know who you are. You could be really nice people with great hair and
who are nice to smelling ponies. People and you
the body of a god and an IQ of 100%.
And the body, furniture the body of IKEA.
The body of Christ and the legs of Tina Turner. I don't
what?
Yeah, what? What do you mean? She had nice legs, like what do you...
The personality of Charlize Theron and the legs of Tina Turner.
Yeah.
With Master Blaster along for the ride.
Let's go to mailbag.
Please go to the mailbag.
Nick, why don't you guide us into the wonderful world of the mailbag?
What's in the mailbag this week? I'm just rummaging through it right here. No, okay. Anyway. Okay, our first letter comes from Paper Godzilla. Subject, a challenge.
Oh, okay.
Long time with... a challenge. Long
Come
time,
me, bro.
Challenge.
Second time writer.
In the world.
Since your response to my last letter showed you had different opinions on some shows than me, I guess that I would have to challenge you to a fight in a park somewhere. Where, but
meet me in Rhode Island.
But I am not a whiny teenager, so forget that nonsense.
That guy was like 33 or 35.
Oh, dear God. Besides Future, okay, besides Futurama, what are some American cartoons aimed at adults that you would recommend? Paper Godzilla, Skreonk.
Archer.
Axe Cop.
Oh, that's a good one.
I've never watched Axe Cop.
It's fantastic. Nick Offerman is Axe Cop.
I've read the original comics, but...
Bob's Burgers, definitely.
Bob's Burgers, yeah. Anything with H. John Benjamin in it.
Right.
Just go watch home movies. Watch old episodes of Dr. Katz. Go watch that episode of Space Ghost where he introduced Space Ghost to Coast, Harvey Birdman, attorney at law.
I'm going to follow that ant back to its home. I'm going to kill his whole family.
My favorite episode of Space Ghost is King Dead.
You know, it's been off the air for a long time, but I still really like The Critic. I think that was a great show.
That was okay. You know, I didn't like it as much in rewatch as I did when I was young and I watched it the first time as a kid. The Flintstones, that was made for adults originally before it got turned into a kid's show. Hence their endorsement of cigarettes.
With how much crying it made me do, I'm having trouble believing Steven Universe is a children's show right now.
No, it is. Children's shows should be able to make you cry. It's
okay. Well, it's ripping my soul out and stomping it. So that's where I'm at. No, I agree with you, Trey. I was just I just wanted to name drop that show because I like it.
Yeah. Archer though is just
Archer is so good.
Favorite.
I think I work an Archer quote into my daily vernacular just because of how useful it is lately.
When you guys had me on A Taco Tonight on the same episode as
Amber Nash and Lucky Yates,
I like had to prevent myself from like. I consider my interview pretty mediocre only because I had to use all my self-control not to start squeeing. And then when Lucky Yates like responded to part of my story, I had to like keep myself from like freaking out because Lucky Yates was responding to part of my story.
I still interact with Lucky on Twitter.
You know, he's great. Like every now and then
he's really great.
Responds back to things. I mean, he's like literally those two are probably some of the most fun we've ever had on the show.
That was one of the best episodes ever.
Well because
that was,
you know,
easily the best interview.
The funny thing is I've interacted with tons of voice actors over the years. I've interacted with people who literally like Robert Axelrod, you know, did stuff that I saw as a kid. And I've gotten jaded when it comes to like anime voice actors just because I've like had to interact with so many of them over the years. But for some reason, these two people who really don't do anything that these other actors who I've interacted with it's Archer. It's it's freaking Dr. Krieger.
It's the best, one of the best shows out there right now. So watch Archer.
Yeah,
H. John Benjamin basically dominates your best options for adult cartoons. Because, Archer, Bob's Burgers.
I have gotten my wife hooked on Bob's Burgers literally over the past, month and a half. And now she's going to cosplay Linda at GeekCon.
Hawk and Chick is my new favorite episode.
I am announcing here that I will be cosplaying Bob Belcher.
Oh, my God.
At GeekCon. I will shave down to just the mustache.
Jeez.
Whoa.
And I have my bald spot's in the perfect spot. I literally, I'm not going to bother taking the bandana off right now because just my hair's a mess. But because I was out hiking by a lake this morning. But I have the same bald spot that Bob does. So we're going to do Bob and Linda at GeekCon.
Ken's gonna be
already
there.
So you can talk to.
And Gen's going to be sharing my table.
Yeah. Have Gen bring
Gen is going to wear a jean. Yeah, no, we're going to have the three of us behind my table at
it'll be adorable.
Random Ramsey doesn't know how to feel about Bob's Burgers. You should feel wonderful about it. It should make you feel happy in the pants. And if it doesn't, you should take a long, hard look at your pants.
Thought we're going somewhere else. Anyway, as far as the other half of Paper Godzilla's letter.
Yeah, I was not checking that yet because it relates to.
I deleted the part that on the version you got sent. Yeah, it's Paper Godzilla did guess the book, and we're going to address that at the later in the show.
At the proper time.
Moving on to the next letter from Anon Omos. With the
hey, subject, welcome, Mr. and Mrs. Omos. Omos.
Mr. or Mrs. or Ms. Omos says, subject, Nick Izumi is awesome. Message, hello, Nerd and Ty. I am just writing to say that Nick Izumi is awesome. That is all. Signed, a big Nerd and Ty fan.
Yay.
Nick Izumi is awesome. This is true.
We agree. We agree, which is why it's much nicer to have Nick Izumi on the show than Gen, even though we love Gen.
Oh.
Now, Gen replacing Fur.
Yeah, right.
We had that happen on an episode of Otaku Tonight.
That sounds like a genius plan.
That time that Fur died.
Yeah, it was an Anime Milwaukee, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. My voice was gone. And I remember it because I used the last of my voice for us to sing that Frozen parody. That
your
I
voice
still get people,
was gone, Ben. You were dead to me.
That I still get people coming up to me randomly going, hey, Fur, do you want to go to Danny's?
We needed to do a follow-up to that song. We need it. Need it.
I was sitting in a Denny's like, you know, it really isn't that great.
It depends on the Denny's.
It really does. We can't go to Denny's at GeekCon, though. Not anymore.
There's still a Denny's in Madison. It's just not close.
It's just really far away.
It's not stumbling distance.
The other Denny's is the one where I once had a waiter forget about me. So I was there at like 4 in the morning with my ex-girlfriend. This is a very long time ago, early 2000s. And we sat down and we ordered drinks. And this guy who was wearing, like, seriously, like, Coke bottle glasses. And we're sitting at this table, and we order our drinks. We get our drinks, and we're waiting to order our food. And he's spending all this time with this table full of high school girls who are, like, sitting next to us. And he's, like, literally 10 feet. But, like, a half hour passes, yeah. And he hasn't taken our food order yet. And it's weird. And so eventually we're just like, you know, it was like 4 in the morning. Like, we're just like, we're too tired to eat. We just need to leave. And so we went to the front and we're like, can we just pay for our drinks and go? Because, you know, we had ordered our food and it just never came. And so, like, we were like, can we just pay for our drinks and go? And he like got to the counter and he was like, wait, I thought you guys left. He had spent the last 20 minutes 5 feet from me.
Jesus.
So that's why I don't go to the other Denny's in Madison. Screw that. He probably doesn't work. It's been like 50. Like,
for what it's worth, I was at the other Denny's recently, and they screwed up my order twice. So
I'll go to the Denny's in Lafayette. Okay, how about that? They only occasionally screw things up. Stop talking about Denny's. Why don't you take the next letter, Fur?
Yeah, our next letter and our last letter of the night, Fortnite, comes from Brenda Gibner. Subject is Sci-Fi Fridays. She writes, hello. So when I was in high school, Sci-Fi Fridays meant Stargate and other good shows. Since then, nothing has been the same until now. Three shows on Friday nights are great, especially the new ones. Defiant Season 3. Got to say the third season started off very Game of Thrones with those deaths, and so far the season is good. I'm one of those people who like the show and so glad it's back on. Killjoys, Space Bounty Hunters, which is a good concept, and it is a good show. This last Friday was the premiere, and it is great. Aaron Ashmore is one of my favorite sci-fi actors, and great to see him back being on Warehouse 13, right? It's not Firefly, but still good. Dark Matter, interesting concept of people waking up on a ship not knowing who they are and have to figure it out. Only 2 episodes so far, but still good, considering people who worked on Stargate are now working on this show.
Good in spite of it.
Plus, David Hewlett is on it, and he is so great. So far, Sci-Fi Fridays are back and better than ever. Hopefully it stays this way and we can enjoy it for years to come. Hope you have a good 2 weeks and at least you're not in 114 degree weather like we are. It sounds hot in Arizona, Brenda. Thanks for writing to us.
Yeah, the weather's actually been really nice here.
It's been hot like these last 3 days. We've been pushing 90.
Well, here. In Indiana, our temperature's been in the 90s a lot, but it's been like sunny and like it's great to go to the drive-in at night or like at the lake it was cooler. Like, you know, it was like it peaked. It was in the 80s, but when I was at a lake this weekend. I don't remember if I said that during the episode or not, but it was night there. I don't know. I have air conditioning. I don't care.
So
I've been meaning to check out Killjoys. It sounds pretty cool.
So because I was traveling this weekend, I didn't get to watch Friday night shows yet. Like, I literally got home and then set up to do the show here. So I haven't seen Killjoys yet. I did see the Defiance 2-hour season premiere and the Dark Matter opening. I like Dark Matter. Obviously, Defiance season 3, I'm a fan of Defiance. I like that it was really interesting how willing they were just to, like, they killed a lot of people. They killed a lot of, like, regular actors on the show in the opener. I'm not going to spoil who, but lots of people die. Dark Matter, I liked it, kind of in spite of who's writing it. Joe Malozzi, I have mixed opinions on. He's done some good stuff, but he often has no idea what to do with female characters. I think, if you really want an example of, like, just, like, kind of how mediocre Joe Malozzi is on his own stuff, look at the first season of the Transporter TV series before he quit. And his episodes written for that show are literally, like, the worst episodes of that whole season. And the show got markedly better once he was gone. He also is the reason why Samantha Carter got dragged onto Stargate Atlantis and then had nothing interesting happen for a whole season. Like, that show, because she was redundant to the cast, because her character didn't add anything that Joe Flanagan or David Hewlett's character already did. Although I will admit the fifth season after Carter, when they brought in Robert Picardo, was very good. But they actually, like, did things with his character. Joe Malozzi is not bad, but he's just not as good as he thinks he is. So Dark Matter, though, it's based off of a graphic novel he wrote he co-wrote with someone else. And it's, I don't know, I like the first episode. Every character literally is, though, a cliche. Like, you've got the stereotypical Asian ninja. You've got the robot everyone is a trope archetype, which is fine if it's done right, but it makes me, like, it's, I will enjoy Dark Matter, but it's solid B science fiction. Like, I will file that under my Crow Stairway to Heaven catalog of things that I like. Well, it's better than that. It's not like it's Viper or something, you know, but at its best, it's never going to be better than, like, Babylon 5.
People tell me that that's a pretty high show to, like, rate things against, though.
Babylon 5 is a great show in the situation where you consider it as a single series with a single overarching story that is cohesive on its own. It is not, it's not Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Babylon 5 is about as good as you can get while still being considered B science fiction.
Okie dokie. That makes sense.
It's very enjoyable. I mean, and don't get me wrong, it was phenomenal for the 90s.
Right.
But you have to remember that Deep Space Nine was literally the same premise, better. Because Paramount totally ripped off J. Michael Straczynski, but that's a whole other thing.
Oops.
So yeah, I'm excited about Sci-Fi Friday being back. I'm tuning in. I'm watching it. I've got a watch this last Friday still, and I'll probably do that tomorrow, but yeah, I'm excited about it. I don't know, I'm a bit more of a TV science fiction nerd than, say, Fur.
I should really give
I don't have cable anymore, so
I have the time to watch shows that Nick doesn't.
This is true.
So yeah, all right, so we should move on to the Vomit Hat Steve challenge.
We should.
Because we're an hour and a half into this episode. So
it's
we got
to be fast.
All right, so we had a lot of guests on the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. Keir Vaughn guessed The Theory of Time by Sean Carroll, which is wrong, but good try. Sean Corse got close by guessing Hyperspace by Michio Kaku, which he admittedly read in my parents' basement in 2000 while going to Gen Con. But no, it was not Hyperspace by Michio Kaku, although I do have that. Right here. It was not this.
Because of course you do, Trey.
Well, I've used it as a book on the show before. Oh. It was, in fact, Parallel Worlds by Michio Kaku, and Paper Godzilla got it right. Paper Godzilla got it right. So Paper Godzilla, you are going to be added to the Hall of Awesome. What is the Hall of Awesome, you ask? Well, the Hall of Awesome is people who guess what book we're doing for the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. What's the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge? Well, why didn't I tell you this to start with? Well, I was in a hurry and stupid. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, at the end of every episode, I read a section of a book. And if you guess what it is, you get into the Hall of Awesome. And we put your name on the website and we read your name at the end of the episode. So, Paper Godzilla, you get to join Arkhamize, Zero, Rena Innocenti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slither ED, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, and Lily Soros.
Welcome aboard.
So that retires Parallel World, so it means I had to come up with a new book. Which, this is the old book. The new book, which I will almost showed you, which I will now read a random sentence from. Let's see here. She stood there, brow wrinkled, watching him. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com and click on the contact form and tell us the name of the book and the author. And we will add you to the Hall of Awesome. If you don't, you won't be added to the Hall of Awesome. This is how this works. If you have anything else you'd like to write to us, tell us, scream at us, yell from the rooftops while yelling for sanctuary, go to nerdandtie.com, click on the contact form, write us. Let us know why you think that fur looks like male Tina. Let us know why you think Nick really, really, really likes pasta, even if he doesn't.
I do really, really like pasta. That's not even a joke.
Just go ahead. Yell at us. Scream at us. Tell us your name. Shout it from the rooftops. I don't know where I'm going with that. Anyways,
wait, is
yes,
pasta
write
an option
to us
right now? Because that sounds delicious.
Write to us so we can, you know, wrap the show.
Absolutely.
Well, it has been an honor recording yet another episode of Nerd and Tie with you guys.
We're up to episode. What episode
this
is this?
Episode 50.
Whoa, it's 50. Yeah. We did it. We're halfway to 100.
Well, that's something to be proud of.
That doesn't count the specials.
No, but that's awesome.
Still something to be proud of.
Happy 50th, everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, you know.
Wait, why didn't we get David Tennant for our 50th? What the hell, Trey?
Because not in the budget. Anyways.
We couldn't get David Hayter.
Nick,
for,
yeah. Tell us who you are.
All right. As always, I'm Nick Izumi.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I'm Firsters.
And you can always subscribe to us through iTunes or Stitcher. Just go to nerdandtie.com, click on the buttons. We got all that stuff. Also, if you subscribe to us through iTunes or Stitcher, please rate and review us and tell other people what you think about us and be awesome.
And keep on spocking in the free world.
Yeah.